I'm Richard Porter.
And I'm Johnny Smith.
This is Smith and Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and many other things.
In actual person.
In actual person.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hi, everybody. I'm going to start this by saying I'm going to hit the highway like a battering ram on a silver black phantom bike.
What are you talking about?
Well, because I woke up this morning, as you know, with a hangover, and...
All right.
To the news that Meatloaf has died.
What?
Meatloaf's just died.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I know. It's really sad. Yeah.
Oh, no.
74.
Oh. Yeah.
And of course, it's on the BBC News. I don't normally watch the news, but I was so hungover and I needed to distract myself from feeling ropey.
All right, so...
that I put the news on.
God, that's... what a way to find out for me.
Yeah.
Maybe I presume that people listening to this may have heard the news. It's, for context, it's Friday morning. It's the morning after the glittering What Car Awards.
What car?
What car? With a question mark. And Johnny and I are in a hotel room in swinging central London. And but I didn't know about Meatloaf. I met Meatloaf once.
What?
Well, in a
car? What?
Say, what?
Car?
What? Car? Awards?
Did you really?
Yeah. Well, when I was working on Top Gear... our office was above the One Show office that was also their studio. And sometimes, if all the dressing rooms next to their studio slash office were being used, they would put celebrity guests into this meeting room.
Hang on, you can't say meeting room when you talk about Meatloaf. There's too many uses.
meat room. There was this room that could be used as a dressing room. But to get to the lifts from this room, you had to walk through the Top Gear office because it was on our floor. And I was working late. I was the last person in the office. The One Show was on. And
foreign people will need to know that The One Show is the most sort of like mild vanilla flavoured
television
show.
It's just like a gentle breeze blowing across the television. It's so mild.
Oh,
well, it sort of is and it isn't because it's sort of... and they always
it's
have...
it's a watery korma of a curry.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it? It's a, it's a tofu passanda of a TV show. And so creamy, and yet so tasteless. But but they do have that thing that I always find so uncomfortable in television programmes. They do gear changes, don't they? Because they'll go, well, Giles Brandreth will be back later to meet more of Britain's funniest badgers. But now... here's a thing about children with cancer. And you sort of go, oh, God.
Oh, no.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, no, this is so serious. And they'll come out of that and go, after that film was made, unfortunately, all the people in it died.
Anyway.
Back to... there's a lot of anyways. And sometimes you'll see... what was her name? The Welsh lady who did it. Alex Jones, isn't it?
Yes.
She still do it? Or maybe
yeah,
not.
I think she does.
Yeah.
Well,
and
I mean,
before her, Christine Bleakley.
That's
was,
who was Irish.
Yeah, was the host, along with... Adrian Childs did.
Yes.
But I think Alex Jones used to, sometimes you would see, and they must have rehearsed it, and yet she would still, you'd see that she was reading the auto cue and she got her tone a bit wrong as she embarked on the sentence she was reading, and you would see her go sort of down the box a little bit. So it'd be like, anyway, that was hilarious. Now, leukemia will affect many people in Britain. And you go, oh no, she's had to really, boom,
hang on,
bang it down into third.
That's like a Ford 10-speed auto box where it doesn't know where it wants to be.
Mm.
And, you know, the kick down is so
sensitive. Yeah.
When you kick down, it kicks three down,
yeah.
not one.
Go, that's the thing. It'll go down as many gears as it can without... it's hoping you won't notice that it's dropped four gears at once. Well, that's Alex Jones going, the inimitable Adrian Childs there. Another thing that's hilarious is bone marrow transplants. And, of course, there. But you just go, oh, no.
It's CVT.
Read ahead.
I think tennis players, when they're interviewed, and I do like tennis, and actually I think football managers can be a bit like this, they're awkward when they're being interviewed. And they do almost a sort of like accidental VTech. It's like a vote. So they go something like, so the game went well, and then I went and decided to move across to the third frame, and then I did a... and Tim Henman was always good at that. In the third set, I was finding it really difficult. I came around and we won that one. Well, and
just goes onto the lumpier cam.
It's the
before a gear change. We're back down. We're bogged down again.
It's Or a massively laggy turbo where you've been waiting for it to come, and by the time it comes, you don't want it anymore.
It spools up too much.
You've gone through a shop window with it glowing.
Anyway, so Meatloaf.
Yeah, Loaf.
With someone from the One Show who's looking after him, wanders into the Top Gear office, and he goes, this place is kind of a mess, which it was. The Top Gear office was disgusting.
I bet it was awful.
And... but I'm the only person still sitting there, and it was hard for me to ignore that Meatloaf was commenting on our office. So I went, I do apologise for the state of our office, you know, but we kind of like it like this. And he stopped, and he's looking at me, and he went, I couldn't work like this, man. And I was thinking, why would you have to work in an office, Meatloaf? You're Meatloaf. But yeah, and he was. I was like, I can only apologise. And he's like, this is crazy.
I wonder
how
if he was a,
like
he was a clean freak. I wonder if he
I
was
think
a,
maybe so.
Maybe
yeah.
a detailer.
But it struck me. I couldn't work like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay. You don't have to. You don't in Meatloaf's office. It isn't a thing.
When it was announced, I had that proper moment of going, you have to like one of Meatloaf's songs.
Yes.
It was very out there, and he bucked the trend of being, a kind of a pretty heartthrob. He had an amazing vocal range.
Yeah.
But also just looked like a living, breathing Phantom of the Opera. Which
Now, Meatloaf was an excellent proponent of the sweaty hanky, wasn't he?
God, it was
He's
amazing.
A mid-gig dabber. Oh, he'd just have the hanky out. There'd be a lot of forehead dabbing during a Meatloaf gig.
Oh, it was amazing. And it was sort of like, was it like steampunky before steampunk was a thing? I reckon almost. You can imagine Meatloaf on a penny farthing.
Frilly cuffs?
Very frilly cuffs. The sort of, they were popular in the 60s. They came back in the 60s, the sort of Dickensian shirt.
Yes.
I don't know what you would call it.
I think they were just called Dickensian shirts.
So the news anchor said, I bet there's going to be a lot of people today revisiting their favourite Meatloaf track. And I thought, yeah, like Bat Outta Hell's obviously the most famous.
Yeah.
And it's the one which... he's going to hit the highway like a battering ram and on a silver black Phantom. I always think of Meatloaf, probably. I don't know, actually, if he did have a motorcycle license. I always think imagine if he did the song and it went multi-platinum, which it did. And then he was like, shit, I don't know how to ride a motorbike. Yeah. People are expecting this.
I'm gonna get called out on this.
And he just tries it a few times and just can't quite get
He's
the clutch.
Got some rubbish little 125cc.
Well, it's one of those choppers, because it would have been the 70s, with like, I don't know, a 1 centimetre wide front spoked wheel. But the back wheel is like 10J. And it's a 1200cc V-twin. So all it does is pushes on everywhere. He's feathering the clutch and it's constantly understeering to the point where you're like, even an experienced bike rider is going to have a go on this.
Oh, man.
Yeah, Loaf. It made me realise my favourite Loaf track is actually, this is not relevant to cars at all, is You Took the Words Right Out of My Mouth.
Mm.
It's an absolute tune.
You took the words right out of my mouth. It must have been while I was kissing you. Is that the lyric?
Yes, that's right.
Mm.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
That's a good song, isn't it? I like that, yeah.
There's even acceptable clapping in it. I'm normally against clapping.
Is there?
Yeah. In the right at the end where the music drops and it's just him and the backing singers.
What was I listening to yesterday? I was listening to a song that I realised has got claps on it that I'd never noticed before. And I was thinking, they're very low in the mix. Like, at the last minute, they went, oh, shit, this is embarrassing. Let's just turn those down. You can't have too much going on there. I like a hand clap. I told you this before, but maybe not on the podcast, that when I was younger and single, unsurprisingly, I used to have a synthesizer.
Oh, gosh, you have told me this, yeah.
And I had a synth nerd, of which I know there are some listening, because every so often we bring up synth stuff and I get emails about it, but I had a synthesizer called an Ensoniq VFX, which is a big...
Was it a very wide one?
A very wide
Did
one.
Did it have a stand that looked like an ironing board?
Yes.
Oh, amazing.
Which is a step up from my previous synthesizer, which I literally just used to play on an ironing board. I mean, I say play, I can't really play. I used to do a lot of, you know, sequenced stuff. And the Ensoniq was famous for its powerful sequencer that was built in. You do it on a laptop these days. But the one thing that the Ensoniq didn't have in the sound banks that I had was a hand clap sound.
Oh.
And I spent ages making one by layering other sounds and fucking about with them. You could do it by sort of like taking something quite crunchy and slowing it down or something. But I spent time making a hand clap sound.
That's amazing.
As I said, I was single at the time.
If Vince Clarke from Erasure and Yazoo and Depeche Mode is listening to this, he's probably nursing a semi right now, just thinking about that. Anyway,
I was just having breakfast with. So we stayed in different hotels last night, didn't we? You walked 3 miles across central London.
2.4, yeah. Really? It's wonderful.
Like a bat out of hell, but at walking speed.
I'm going to hit the pavement. Do you know what? I have to say, I walked because I do like walking in London and I don't come to London that much anymore.
I was walking in London.
And there's a big billboard poster, and I even took a picture of it. And if you're a Patreon, I'll put it up on there. For a brand that I've never heard of called Palm Angels.
What?
So P-A-L-M, the tree.
Yeah.
Angels. And it's all done in sort of gothic script. And I think it's female fashion.
Oh.
And I, of course, me going palming, as in the art of hypersensitive power steering, driving with the palm of the hand. I was thinking, are Palm Angels like this breakaway faction of female drivers who just, they only ever, you know, like smash the wheel round with the palm of the hand. And there's an underground movement for very high electric assistance power steering.
I'll be
palm
honest.
Palm Angels.
Clearly my dirty mind immediately went to something a bit ruder than that. Palm Angels sounds like some kind of pornographic film.
Hey there. I'm a member of the Palm Angels.
God, get me the Palm Angels. No. This man needs wanking off immediately. Get the Palm Angels.
This man needs milking. Fetch the Palm Angels. Awful.
Oh, dear. So, it's taken the edge off things, the news about Meatloaf. But we, apart from that, I feel absolutely dreadful.
You do look quite hungover.
I haven't had a shower or anything.
Haven't you?
It was such a struggle just to pull these clothes on this morning. So I had breakfast with our friend Alex Goy. Hello, Alex, because I know that he listens to this. Because
hi, Alex.
It's over breakfast. And he's staying in this hotel. He sent me a message going, I'm going for breakfast. And I went, okay, I'll be down in a minute. And then I kept having to message him to say, sorry, I'm on my way, because it was just putting trousers on was so much of a struggle. I had to take a break.
Did you have to do controlled breathing to avoid any chunderous behaviour?
Yes.
Yeah, I was in that way.
I was at the point where I thought, shall I just give in and be sick? Because it would be the easiest thing to do.
Yeah.
And then I went down for breakfast and I had some salty, meaty bacon and sausage, delicious, but with scrambled egg.
Yeah.
And midway through eating some egg, I suddenly thought, I think I'm going to be sick.
Oh, I thought the other way around. I thought you think it's bedding in now.
It did eventually.
You're back up to working temperature.
Yeah,
and
it took a while.
All the gauges are settling.
Yeah, that's it. But suddenly a light came on.
What, an oil starvation?
Some kind of light, There was that ominous bing sound that you get in some cars. And I went, now, this is neither the time nor the place to invite my good friend, the Cardinal Chunder, into the room, because it's the room is a delightful breakfasting area of a expensive central London hotel. And it was okay, but I really thought, I was, you know, when you're at such a point where you go, what's my strategy here?
Yeah.
If this escalates, if all of the lights come on, what do I do? And I thought, I could see the outside. I was like, the thing is, I'm just going to...
I open the window, cold air, it's really good. It's good for turbos, it's good for humans. I wazzed up the sash window and I stuck my head out and I realised I had a dressing gown on that was completely open. So if there was an office block opposite my hotel room and I did that whole, there's a bloke in the window with his open dressing gown staring out of the window. So I put all of that away. And then I made the terrible error of consuming a vast amount of units, and I don't drink that heavily, and neither do you. But
the first drink I've had in 2022.
Right. Okay.
Heavy drink. Discounting the fact I was still drinking after midnight on New Year's Eve, but
because same for me actually.
We have this nice thing in our street where a lot of the neighbours come out onto the street at midnight on New Year's Eve.
Really?
Yeah, and everybody just comes out and has a drink together.
That's really...
And it's I think because of the circumstances we've been in, that it had an extra sort of weight to it this year, where people were really keen just to see other people and hang out and catch up and stuff.
Yeah.
And so I was out there until half two in the morning, I think. But one of our neighbours opened a bottle of whiskey.
Oh, shit.
And gave me a full, what some friends and I refer to as a Mike Baldwin measure. Do you remember Mike Baldwin in Coronation Street? Always seemed to drink like sort of beakers of scotch in The Rover's Return. And so a large measure of whiskey.
A Baldwin measure.
It's known as a Baldwin. And he gave me a full Baldwin, like four fingers of.
Stop it. Full Baldwin. It sounds like a wrestling move. he gave me the full Baldwin, he did.
I don't know, for some reason it sounds to me like a euphemism for circumcision or something. But either way, it's not. It just means a big measure of whiskey. And I had a very, very big measure of whiskey, and that was the last drink I had until last night. And I got a bit giddy.
I woke up and I realised, A, lots of units consumed right up until 5 minutes before climbing into bed. So there was no coming down. Mm. I was still doing a triple vodka at 5 to 4 this morning.
God.
Not only that, I didn't drink enough water. So when the alarm went off, my lips were so chapped. If you know, like old cars on UV damaged tyres, you're like a caravan that never goes anywhere all year round, and the sun just pelts on.
Rock hard, but flaky at the same time.
They look like a licorice allsort. My lips look like that. And then I realised I was so dehydrated that it's a bit like when you start a car with no oil in it, and the oil light just flickers immediately to say, don't do it.
Stop.
Don't do it.
Switch it off.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
And that's the way I kick things off this morning, which was nice.
I like the fact that you ordered a room service breakfast, which arrived about 4 hours after you went to bed.
It was less than 4 hours.
I woke up,
my alarm went off about 3 minutes before the door went, because I left it as late as possible. And you know when the alarm goes off and you just go, oh, I've obviously set it for the wrong time. This is taking the piss.
Yeah.
And then you look at the time and go, oh no, this is the real time. Shit.
Yeah. I had the opposite, where I woke up and I went, oh shit, I'm awake, that's annoying, it must be about 6 a.m. or something. It was 10 to 10. And I went, do you have a back time though? You count how many hours you think you've been asleep and then go, that's not enough or that is enough.
Oh, completely. And my wife reckons it's a really destructive thing to do, because all you'll do is annoy yourself.
Yeah.
And you can't rewind the time.
No. But I think I'm slightly fixated with the idea that I have to have 8 hours sleep, and of course I rarely do.
You probably don't need
7 is okay, 6 is not okay.
6 is ever so regular for me in the last 2 years.
Yeah, but you're...
Since off of pandemic.
I mean, the number of times that I wake up in the morning and switch my phone on, and the first thing that comes onto my phone when I turn it back on is a WhatsApp from you that was sent at 1:45 a.m.
I know. And it's not even like I'm out consuming units and having fun.
No.
I'm sat in my cold house with a rug around my legs. And... Do you know what? I was thinking, going back to Meatloaf, bless him, going to hit the highway like a battering ram. You know when that line makes me feel like, you know when you ride or drive, in our case mostly, something that's got such a swell of torque that it's so exciting, because you know it's there on the tap.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of cars which I always go, yeah, I remember the first time driving one of those, and you just go, flip, that has got some proper like... It's like a kidney punch, isn't it? You go down low and go boom, and you go, and it's like shitting hell. How much pounds feet's going on here? It's amazing. I love that.
Listeners may like to know that Johnny was doing a sort of Cockney boxing move.
I was doing a low punch.
I can't. I realised when I used to go to the trainer. There's a guy who's got a little gym up the road from our house, like literally just up the road, and. I used to go there, and he was obsessed with boxing.
Was he?
Yeah, he loved boxing, and he used to talk to me about boxing. He always forget that I wasn't that interested in boxing and start talking to me about boxing. And I'd have to go, yeah, okay. But then, so as a consequence, rather than just make you do burpees and stuff like that, he was often like, let's get on the bag, let's do some bag work. And
bag
I just realised I never, and gyms, for some reason, why do gyms always have mirrors in them?
I think... Gyms have mirrors in them because it's like a gratification thing of like you've turned up and you're putting in some effort.
Yeah.
And in the case of, I guess, apparently for things like weights, it's to check your technique. Because you might not be aware that you're hunching your back or your elbows are out and they should be in. So it's to check the actual technique. But it is, sometimes it's bad, because when I used to go to the gym, and unfortunately I haven't been to the gym for a year, I've lost all motivation. I used to turn up at 6:30 in the morning and look in the mirror and go, you old, tired twat.
Well, that's the problem I had with, I didn't like catching sight of myself in the mirror in the gym in any context, but particularly if I ever sort of glanced over, saw the mirror while I was doing some bag work. I'd be like, you look shit. Look at you.
It's a bit
I have no technique at all. And
it's just not for you.
No. There was once, the guy who owns this place and was the main trainer there, he just used to like, I think, getting people on the bag, but he never really gave you any feedback. He'd just be like, you know,
just
go on, keep
smash
going,
it.
And that's it, yeah. And then one time he was away and he got this other guy in there and he went, oh, let's get on the bag here. And then he actually sort of went,
what are you doing?
And he gave it, and he was genuinely sort of went, it was a bit like, what's that?
How long have you been doing it this badly?
Exactly. It's just like, he did. I think one of the things he said was, my elbows were in the wrong place. And I was like, well, but they're where they are. They're in the middle of my arms. I can't remember.
I think
it's
in,
out.
In
yeah,
for more
yeah.
power. Out, you buckle.
Yeah.
Listen to us.
I know.
Watching someone on the boxing bag with good technique and power, because, you know, to be able to hit it with power for minutes is far harder than you realise.
It's really exhausting.
If I say 1 minute on the bag, as hard as you can,
oh my God,
don't stop. It's serious. But when someone does it, it's a bit like, have you ever watched Floyd Mayweather skipping? Never thought I would talk about this. I know that just sounds silly.
Yes. Through binoculars.
Honestly,
yes,
Floyd Mayweather, obviously incredible boxer, slightly cocky. There's a video on YouTube when he was practicing.
You have to be cocky as a boxer, don't
I
you?
I think you do. It's part of the mind game.
It's part of the training, isn't it? It's like, right, let's do a bit of bag work and then we'll do some cockiness training.
Bag work and cocky.
Yeah, all right, now strut. Strut towards me. Now say you're the greatest. Go on. No, say it with more conviction. Watching videos of Prince Nassim and going, oh yeah, I'll use his technique of being the cockiest man in the world.
He's a good crasher, Prince Nassim Mohammed, wasn't he? Did he have a Merc SLR? Did he have a McLaren SLR?
I think he might have done.
And I think he might have put it in a tree
did,
or
actually.
A ditch. Or a...
Do you know, actually, in my last Boring Car Trivia book, I did a list of Merc SLR owners, because it's a weird and eclectic group, and he was one of them.
Yeah.
Along with Jay Leno and Donald Trump.
I think there's a certain supercar driver who doesn't want to get any technique training on driving, because, you know, they know best.
Yeah.
I'm talking to mostly men here, because I know that women tend to be better at listening and that sort of thing. But it's the one-handed supercar driver when you're on it and you're still driving it one-handed and you think, this is... It's like the guy on the London Bridge who he kicks it down and it steps right out, and he's so late at trying to correct it. It's already backwards with the airbags off, and it's almost like he...
Well, they're still texting.
Yeah, you know what I mean? He's like, it's just like, seriously, man, you're driving it one-handed when it's on it. There's nothing more poetic, in fact, than someone who can step a powerful car out while it's moving, not pulling away from a junction, and bring it back in, ultra smooth.
Yeah, it's the smoothness, isn't it?
And you were never in any doubt that they didn't have it. It's lovely.
That lack of that final lurch that really snaps your neck of the amateur.
It's bringing it back in. That's the hard bit. Getting it out, easy.
I put on Twitter the other day a link to the original title sequence for Magnum PI.
Yes, you did. Yeah.
But what I was compelled to remark on was how well Tom Selleck controls that, and admittedly it is from a standstill, but he boots the Ferrari on grass.
Yeah.
So it spins up.
Oh, it's...
He gets a slither on, but then he goes on to tarmac.
Yeah.
And that's...
Oh, such a surface change.
Oh, man. Hey, that reminds me, actually. I keep getting messages from people going, oh, I saw you on the telly because I was in the last Grand Tour.
You were, and I haven't seen it yet.
It's all right, I suppose. I don't know. People seem to like it.
Are you pleased with it?
I don't. It's weird because I wasn't across all of that show, but I did do a bit of car research and sort of finding out little bits of trivia.
You did a bit of track work, weren't you?
And then I did a bit of... Well, so I was in the office one day for a meeting about this, and The presenters are obsessed with rallycross. They love it. It's their favourite thing. Any excuse to go to Lyddon Hill, they're there. It's weird. It's like, you know, Jeremy sort of has so many other things going on in his life, not least running a farm.
Yeah.
But if you said, Jeremy, I know it's absolutely slashing with rain, it's grey and it's cold, but do you want to go to Lyddon Hill this afternoon? You'd be like, yeah, okay.
It's, oh, really?
They adore it down there. I don't know what it is. And it's a bore lake to get to and everything, but they just... So we're in the office and... I think we'd agreed that we're doing this thing about French cars. One of the things that had to be acknowledged was the French make great hot hatchbacks. What do we do about that? And then probably Jeremy went, let's go rallycrossing in. And of course, then James and Richard go, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, let's do it.
And so that was sort of decided on the spot. And then Jeremy went, you should come down as well. You could be one of our drivers. We'll need more cars. Come and drive. And I was like, okay, all right.
Well, if he invites you, you come.
So... we turned up at Lyddon Hill. I've never been there before. I've never driven that track.
No, neither
and
have I.
It was a bit of a mistake that I didn't say, can I go out and at least sort of have a little sighting?
A recce? You need a recce.
So instead, I didn't. And the one thing Jeremy said to me, watch out for that curb as you come back onto the start-finish straight off the gravel, because it'll catch you out. It's really steep. If you hit that, you're going over. Well, of course...
who put a curb there?
Well, later on in the race, I hit the curb and almost rolled the car up. Which didn't quite come across on camera, how close I was to rolling that car over. There was one of the people we work with is a professional racing driver called Nicky Faulkner was there, because he'd coached one of... Marguerite from the office, who was one of the other... drivers in the race. She'd never raced anything or driven anything in anger before, so Nicky gave her a bit of coaching. And afterwards he went another 2 miles an hour and that'd have been on its roof.
Oh shit.
And I was like, yeah. And I got home that evening and my wife went, how was your day? And I went, and I'll be honest, I was a bit shaken up by the whole thing. And I went, no, it was fine, because she'd said to me when I'd left the night before, we stayed over,
don't drive like
she does. Went, please be careful.
Did she?
Yeah. And so she went, was it okay? I'm like, yeah, it's fine. And then she knows Nikki. She saw Nikki on a shoot for something they were doing at her place. And the first thing he said to her was, bloody hell, your husband almost binned it the other week. She came home and went, I was having an interesting chat with Mr. Faulkner earlier on. He tells me you almost rolled the car over. You didn't mention that. And I was like, no, I didn't. But it was horrible. I really thought I was going over. And having rolled the car before... I had a horrible flashback to how noisy and unpleasant that is, even though, you know, that McGann I was driving was caged up, but even so, it's not nice to roll.
You didn't buy the McGann after the shoot?
No, I don't know what happened to it, actually. It's probably somewhere in a yard. I don't know. I'll find out.
I'll make an offer.
Yeah, I had never driven that car until 3-2-1 go.
Oh, shit, Richard. Seriously?
And so 3-2-1 go. I was mid-pack in a grid of six. Floored it, massive torque steer. It almost torque steered into the side of the car next to me.
Oh, was that? Wow.
It okay. was insane.
This was a McGann 225.
Yeah.
RS 225.
But I think it had been monkeyed with a bit. Mm. It's definitely been dropped. It was sitting lower. It was unruly.
I love those.
Then, the gag was we were supposed to set off and then stop before we got to the first corner. Because we're supposed to then go for lunch. There's, you know,
okay.
Slightly xenophobic joke about French working practices that Jeremy had insisted upon. And and so I booted it, almost torqued it into the car next to me, then realised I'd got lots of power, kind of backed off, then accelerated again, but we're supposed to stay in formation. And it was really hard to stay in formation because the car was trying to go, because the people at the front, one of them was Abby Eaton in a Saxo she was in, and that had no power, but she led most of the race because she's a racing driver and she's brilliant.
Yeah.
But so then I almost drove into the back of her, I think. And then we had to brake, which was preordained, but I braked and the brakes weren't very good.
Oh shit, so you were all over the place.
I almost went into the back of Jeremy. So within the space of about 10 seconds, I was having a frigging nightmare in this car, which I'd never driven before. Then we stopped, then we started again. And I've never done rally crossing, and the reason I bring this up is that mix of surfaces.
Yes,
I didn't enjoy it at all. I couldn't get my eye in, and it is Magnum style. It's going from the slidey to the grippy.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I didn't mind going onto the slidey because you can sort of slide into that. But yeah. The that feeling of I'm about it's about to bite.
Have you ever been on a skid pan and then got it a bit wrong so that you're sliding on the wet bit, you know, it's all hosed down.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're in a controlled slide. But in my case, I overshot the skid pan because I was enjoying the slide so much I didn't want to come out of it. And then it goes into high grip tarmac.
Oh, yeah.
And you can very easily end up on your roof. Rallycross cars are regularly on two wheels when you watch them racing.
I think the edit was not... They edited that race. It's very, I mean, a very good edit job because it was a really dynamic race, but on TV. But things were sort of cut around a bit because what then ended up happening is we all got sort of split up, and I found myself sort of just driving around on my own, and it wasn't. And so we kept sort of stopping and regrouping to try and make it more interesting because otherwise everyone was sort of dispersed.
Yeah,
and but yeah, that McGann was so unruly. It was just all over the freaking
shop. I
want
to buy it now.
And I couldn't get my eye in at all on the... And so it's like onto the gravel, slithering all over the place, then backing off to get onto the tarmac.
Yeah, and coming at it straight.
And then just... So you can basically leave it in third and just floor it most places. But it was... Then it was just really quick, but sort of so quick that you were kind of...
I think with the demise of Drive Tribe... Mm. Maybe the three boys should pull their cash into actually doing World Rallycross.
Yes,
as a team.
Well,
that'd be a great idea. I'm sure they could afford it.
I can't even remember the context. I just remember there was once a conversation about building a rallycross track. Well, actually, we did build a rallycross track for the Grand Tour, the second series, because that's when the celebrity guests drove.
Yeah,
those F types. That was basically a rallycross track because it was a mix of tarmac and gravel. But I do remember there was a conversation about building an exact replica of Lyddon Hill that was somewhere more convenient for everyone to get to.
In the Midlands,
yeah, Oxfordshire ideally, because it'd be near Jeremy's house. But that was it, because it was like we were talking about the one downside of Lyddon Hill is it's a bit inconvenient to get to from the rest of the country.
Clarkson's got a farm.
I know,
he can just carve up a field.
Yeah, but you need the. The elevation. Have you been to Lyddon Hill?
No.
It's got a
hill. I've seen it on TV.
Yeah, well, you know it, because there's a big hill with a big hairpin.
Yeah.
Sort of, yeah.
Because it is the home of rallycross, isn't it?
Well, I don't know of any other rallycross tracks in Britain. I mean, I'm sure there are.
In Britain, that's a good question. I've done one in France. I've driven it in a World Rallycross car. Not in competition.
Really?
Yeah, it was pretty hairy.
Yeah.
It was exciting. Mm. It was Loeillac. I think it's called Loeillac, the French one. I've probably mentioned this before on a podcast or a video. When we turned up to film there for Fifth Gear, and I was driving a Citroën, a DS3 rallycross car, and we turned up really early in the morning to do the shoot. And the night before, the day before, had been the sort of practice and the big party where all spectators had come and they often camp. We turned up and there were people just... It was a hot summer morning where the sun's come up. It was a bit sweaty. Mm. There were just people lying... on the ground in dirt, asleep, with no belongings, no sleeping bag. And you go, is that person dead?
Yeah.
Or are they there? Has anyone checked that person?
I had exactly that at Le Mans, out in the forest somewhere. And
you're like,
where you go, should we poke them with a stick?
Yeah, just should we cover them up?
Yes.
I don't know.
Put coins on their eyes?
I digress. But I never remembered to mention the other week when we were talking about sliding doors.
Yeah.
About my daughter's sliding door experience. About 3 years ago, in the summer holidays, you know, when if you've got kids, you book them on activities, just to get them away from you because you've got to fucking work. Anyway, there's a castle near us where they did a week-long activity of, like, you know, archery and then making dens. And it was really exciting. The kids loved it. And the bloke that ran it, I can't remember his name. Let's just call him Phil. He was a really jolly bloke. Enjoyed like teaching kids bushcraft.
Phil's a good name for a jolly bloke. Yeah.
And anyway, Phil had a Bilingo. I think it was a Bilingo. And he would, because the castle had big grounds, he would ferry the kids around in this Bilingo.
Yeah.
And on the on the last day, the weather was not great, and everybody piled into the Bilingo as they have done. And Kitty May said, he said, we got to the other side and the guy went to open the door and it came straight off the rail and onto his toes. And everyone just stood and went, And it was really heavy because the sliding doors are much heavier than you realise.
Yeah.
And he tried to sort of work out how it would hook back on, couldn't work out how it came off. And in the end, this is the hilarious thing, he just leant it up against a fence and went, I'll be back for that at the end of the day. And they drove around for the rest of the day with just no door. And it was raining all day. Bless Phil, it just ruined his bilingual.
But hang on. So he went to open it and it immediately came off. Like
he started the slide,
yeah, and it I just dropped.
I don't know because I've never taken a sliding door off. But if it's like a wardrobe, a sliding wardrobe door, it's got rollers.
Yes, it must
top
do,
and bottom rollers. It? But it basically it just fell off, and my daughter said he could not stop laughing about it because every time they drove past it with no door on, the door was just leaning up against the fence in this beautiful idyllic castle garden.
Did he? I wonder if, as it fell onto his foot. He was in that situation where he realises in a split second, instinct kicks in. And the instinct that kicks in is, I'm in front of children, I can't swear.
Oh, you would have said FFS, wouldn't you?
Yeah, we'd oh dear, that yes. really hurt. Like when...
I've just powdered my toe bone.
My brother, when he was at primary school, his teacher accidentally... I don't know why this was happening in front of a class full of children, but he was cutting, like, you know, that thick sugar paper you used to have at school.
Yes.
He was cutting some of that with a Stanley knife and it slipped and he stabbed himself in the leg.
In the leg?
In the leg. But apparently he went, oh dear, and didn't swear, but he's got a fucking Stanley knife embedded in his leg.
He's a consummate professional.
And he just went, I'll be back in a minute, and left the classroom. And then the next thing, another teacher came and went, Mr. Mendham's had to go to hospital, oh so I'm going to take over, yeah.
But like, yeah, that's like swear. 70s TV,
yeah,
isn't it? You know, oh look, somebody's been very badly injured, yeah. But it's okay. Anyway, on with the show.
Well, that happened to us on Christmas Day because we went to the pub for Christmas, lunch/dinner. We went sort of mid-afternoon in the trad Christmas bizarre timing of Christmas Day, and we got there, we'd pre-booked all this and the pub was very busy, and but the service was really slow, the food was really slow coming out even though we pre-ordered because mm-hmm. you had to. And then finally the manager came over and she went, I'm very sorry for the wait for your food, but the chef has been badly injured. He's had to go to hospital. We were like, badly injured?
Badly
what the hell's
injured?
Happened? Yeah. Didn't ask what. It seemed insensitive. But
that's
yeah.
amazing.
Once that context was provided, it suddenly made sense that you could see this slight panic in the
on
eyes
Christmas
of the
Day.
On Christmas Day. And the place was full to the rafters of people.
I would not trade that job for anything.
Well, that's it. So it then made sense that it was the kitchen had become a captainless ship. And my wife had ordered the turkey, the trad Christmas dinner. Yeah. And when it arrived, there was no stuffing and no pigs in blankets. And
she went,
I thought this was supposed to come with stuffing and pigs in blankets, which she went, this is the main reason I ordered it, because I wanted those elements of it.
Yeah, stuffing's good.
And the waiter went, I'm sorry, but the last of the stuffing and pigs in blankets has been burnt.
Is that what he said?
Yeah.
What, like Viking funeral?
Well, as in, I think it, someone had left it in too long.
Well,
innit?
The chef had
the
obviously
chef
just cut
badly
his leg off yeah. and no one had shut
well,
the oven
it.
Off.
I assume, when you hear badly injured in a kitchen context, you assume knife.
It's
a knife-related
knife.
Accident, but...
Shit.
I know.
That's not good, is it?
We had a nice time anyway, but I hope the
sweet,
chef...
Sweet, sweet time.
The chef's all right.
Oh, I saw an old money car on the way here.
Yes.
I did take a quick picture of it. It was an, let me get this right, let me get my R numbers right, R129 Mercedes SL.
Oh, yes.
So the 90s one.
Yeah.
And the Bruno Sacco spec.
Yeah.
And it was so old money. Very, very wealthy road in Kensington.
Perfect.
No, Knightsbridge. But it was, I noticed it was a 280, so low ranking motor, but probably city use only.
Yeah.
It had one of the wing mirrors was gaffer taped, but silver, and the car was silver, I think, so
okay.
It sort of matched.
Yes.
But old money in so much as no big wheels, standard rims, and they look like they'd never been cleaned, so it's just baked on brake dust.
Okay.
The hood was a little bit baggy and milky, you
yes,
know, the
course,
plastic
yeah.
back window.
They've and got all, three separate back windows, haven't they, on those?
Yes, they do.
So there's
they
a lot
do.
Of opportunity for milkiness.
And on the passenger seat, I just glanced in after I'd taken the shot, and I noticed lots of sort of private doctor's papers.
Oh.
And I didn't like look specifically, and I thought to myself, this is old money.
Yes.
It was outside a six-story townhouse.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, big townhouse. Yeah. And I'm thinking, that car's been there since it was new.
Yeah.
And it's gradually been reversed into and knocked about. And, but it's still got it. It's still got it. It's a good-looking car, that.
Yeah. That's interesting, though, that sort of some running repairs have occurred in there. There's a Toyota Yaris that I sometimes see around. It parks near my kids' school. And when I'm taking the kids, it's sometimes there. That seems to be entirely held together with silver gaffer tape. But it's a silver car again. So from a distance, you could almost believe that it's not, actually. Like, it seems like every plastic part on the exterior of the car is, in fact, held on with gaff. The bumpers, the mirrors. I think one of the side repeaters has been scuffed off.
It's just been shaved.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a carpaccio of repeater. But I wanted to read out an email that we had on the theme of sliding doors. This is from a listener called Kevin Reeves. This is the email that I highlighted the other day.
This is quite funny. Yeah.
Kevin says, "Dear Smith and Sniff, I listened to you talking about the Kangoo/Berlingo/Doblo always sliding doors in podcast 90, which reminded me of a family visit to a safari park, a Chrysler Voyager, and the monkey enclosure.
Oh.
We approached the enclosure with sheer excitement as we could see the cuddly little scallywags jumping on the cars in the queue in front of us, trying to remove wiper blades and roof rails. Anyway, within a few seconds, we had a monkey of our own. Although he was definitely grinning, he looked less friendly than the others. He wasn't interested in door mirrors or washer nozzles. His preference was the handle on the sliding door. The effort he was putting in to remove the handle was quite impressive. But then I heard it. The door mechanism clicked open. The joyous atmosphere inside the car changed immediately to panic as we all realised what was about to happen. But it didn't. The little imposter wasn't tall enough to get any purchase on the ground, so the door wasn't actually sliding open. That was about to change, though, as my quick-thinking brain told me an abrupt acceleration was required to dislodge his grip. I revved the engine, dropped the clutch, and with a squeal of tyres leapt forward. The grinning idiot stayed put, and the door slid fully open."
Of course it did. You absolute flute. Flutation device.
Kevin goes on. "To fix my massive error of judgment, an emergency stop was obviously required to slide the door shut. However, it turns out that in a Voyager, once the door is fully open, it stays open until you pull the handle again."
Oh, shiitake mushrooms.
"To Monkey Boy, it must have looked like we were actually stopping to invite him in. And that's what the little prick did. In that split second, he'd managed to beckon all his family and friends over to join us for an indoor picnic. The scene inside the car was chaotic. The mess, the screaming, the crying. What can only have been a few seconds haunts me to this day, still gives my kids nightmares, and gave my then wife even more ammunition for the divorce."
Oh my gosh.
"Regards, Monkeys. Kevin."
Monkeys in the Voyager.
Monkeys in the Voyager. But also, I love the way that Kevin's story sort of ends on this quite haunting note.
What?
Because Kevin, if you're listening, I would almost relish more information about what happens when, I don't know what kind of monkeys they are, so they don't know the collective noun, but a troop, a whoop, anyway, a posse of monkeys inside your car.
Oh.
How do you get them out again?
And they've got such a strong grip.
They're scratchy, aren't they?
They are scratchy. It's the way they look at you, monkeys, because they know they're related to us.
Yeah.
And they give you that look of like, we know.
Yeah.
We know. We can't talk you. Like you,
yeah.
But we're all right. We can certainly like out-bench press you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we can out-chin lift you. What's the chin up? We can chin up.
Yeah, we could do that. Also, we could rip your face off.
Oh, yeah, this is the thing.
And we're not bound by the social codes that you people have.
Oh, no.
You, brother, we don't care.
Oh, shit. Yeah. I've seen it.
We straddle the line between you and the animal world. Straddle is what we will do.
I've seen gibbons on S-Maxes. And
I was suddenly reminded of, did your kids ever have the fantastic series Oi Frog? Have you seen those books?
No.
Yeah, Oi Frog and then Oi Cat and Oi Dog, and I think there's another one as well. But they're brilliant. But it's all based on the idea that animals have to sit on things that rhyme with them.
Oh.
So dogs sit on logs. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then it goes, gibbons sit on ribbons.
Oh.
Fleas sit on cheese or something. It goes on. They're very funny.
Oh, oh, I've never seen, as long as it's not oi oi dog, otherwise
singular oi, and it's okay. And that the reason it's called that is because it always starts with I think the original one, oi frog, starts with the cat, and the cat's going, oi frog, sit on a log.
And, is it like a dare?
But there's a story arc through the three books that we've got, because the cat imposes what the frog has to sit on, and then the frog in the next book kicks back and goes, I'm not sitting on that anymore.
Really?
I don't like sitting on logs, they're giving me splinters in my bottom. And then the third book, if people have seen these books, they'll know how brilliant they are. If they haven't, this will just sound like drivel, but they are fantastic. But it's Gibbons sitting on ribbons.
Gibbons on ribbons.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm trying to think. What about Gilbans? Gibbons on Gilbans?
No. Is there an animal? There's no animal that rhymes with Gilbon, is there?
Gilbon. Gilbon. Gilbon.
No. Gilbon. Kittens sit on mittens, by the way.
Kittens could sit on reliant kittens.
Ah.
But that's the same word. It's not a rhyming word. It's just the same.
Yeah, but they do some... I'm trying to think if there's...
It's that song, isn't it? The windmills of your mind. There's a...
And then it's like a turning...
Which still reminds me of... A terrible golf cart incident on a beach
in
Pebble Beach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
What is it? It's the old Thomas Crown Affair theme, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
It's quite a wistful song.
It's very wistful, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's that and Year of the Cat by Al Stewart.
Yeah.
Has a lovely wistful quality to it that I enjoy.
Year of the Cat.
Yeah.
Although, he's got such a polite voice.
He has got a polite voice.
Him and Gilbert O'Sullivan. I mean, honestly,
bother you.
Yeah, it's almost like they're sorry that you've got to stop and listen.
I love that song, but I also struggle to hear it without hearing a friend of mine who used to sing, for no apparent reason, used to sing The Year of My Pants.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why.
Oh, I know. Talking of songs, it came on the other day on the radio, All Night Long by Lionel Richie.
All Night.
All night, all night long.
All night.
My mate, Party Boy, whose first car was a Fiesta Ghia, that he crashed on the third day of ownership. For the whole time he got in that, every time he got in it and got out of it or talked about it, he'd always say Fiesta forever.
There was
a comma forever. And
and
that was 25 years ago, and he still, when he mentions the Ford Fiesta, he will always say forever straight after it. Fiesta forever. And I want to know if Lionel Richie,
hang on, doesn't it say Sierra as well? Or
does,
am
he,
I,
does he say Sierra?
No, I think maybe I'm feeling
there is a song about Sierras,
Fiesta,
by Boss Gags.
No, what, but he in that song, doesn't he sort of, he goes Fiesta
forever.
Sierra. Oh, no, maybe my mind's just...
Well, maybe...
Maybe
I
hear
part.
It
maybe
Fiesta, Sierra. He's just listing the 80s Ford range.
I think Lionel Richie was
some
the founder... Some
called the Scorpio.
Lionel Richie was the founder of the Ford Fair, that massive car show.
Oh, does that still go on?
I don't know.
Is it spelled fair as in F-A-Y-R-E, like as in medieval fair?
No, I wish it was there. It's just fair. Ford Fair.
Prithee, fair maiden. Well, thou's to accompany me to the Ford Fair.
Every year, Lionel Richie headlines. And they don't even want him to anymore. It's just a sour joke. And they're like, no, I'm coming.
Well, like madness turning up in Finsbury Park, even though nobody asked them to. Is Lionel Richie here? Yeah, even though we've moved the venue to Billing Aquadrome in the hope we could shake him off, but somehow
he's turned up.
Like, they do no publicity because they want Lionel Richie to not. They do. They schedule it. They check his touring schedule. And they go, all right, he's playing Las Vegas that weekend. There's no way he'll be able to come to a field near Peterborough for ye Ford Fair. And then it turns out Richie's ahead of them. He's booked some kind of tribute act to do the Vegas gig and hope that people won't notice.
Oh,
they paid $200
what any private planes it
yeah, because he's got the G6 on standby. So he can get to ye olde Fordy Fair.
He parachutes in.
he's already singing as he comes down.
And his custom-made parachute is an image of a Fiesta with the blue over. And everyone's like, I'll flip it out, Lionel. Just because you can afford to do it.
No, I think his parachute, you know that, it's the video for Hello, is it, where he's got that terrible clay head? He's a big fan of poor renditions of his own face. So his parachute has a bad drawing of himself on it.
And does it have a speech bubble that says Fiesta forever?
Yes.
Fiesta forever.
But I think he does. He parachutes in, but he's got... Because he's a pro. I mean, he's, you know, showbiz professional for many years. He's got the, yeah, he's got the what do you call it, like the fold back on it.
Madonna mic.
Yeah, but he's also the kind of, okay, over the drop zone in 5, 4, 3, and the band strikes up. So that he can, as he just, as his feet touch the stage, all night long, boom, and then parachute, quick release, boom, it's off. And he's into the dance moves straight away.
It's like a Rio street party vibe to it, but you're in a field in Kent.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, it's not. Sake. This isn't relevant. It's just not.
Come on. I thought.
Just... And because he's so ill, he points, you know, when you point out to the crowd, when you're trying to work the crowd, he'll point at a certain OCs. He'll go, focus our SOC.
Yeah.
All night long. Just so that it's not all about the fiestas.
XR 4x4s yes. All night long. Hear me now. Yeah, I think actually, because they probably, the Ford Fair people booked one of those bands that's reformed, but there's only one original member, like Cameo or something, or Bucks Fizz.
Yeah.
And, but Lionel has paid off the backing band. So that when he descends the parachute, he lands on Cheryl from Bucks Fizz, crushing her to the ground, and the band
taking her out
immediately switched from Making Your Mind Up into All Night Long, and it's like Richie's on it. It's an inside job.
Richie pays to perform at the Ford Fair. They don't pay him. That's the problem. And he's like, we can't get rid of it.
They're the second richest owners club in Britain after that MG lot that seemed to have an office.
Oh, the MG owners club.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's extraordinary. It's like
I reckon it's the automotive form of Scientology. it's an incredible amount of money being passed through, and you're like, how?
What's going on?
MG Scientology. Scientology.
I can't remember what we're talking about.
Thanks to MG owners, by the way. You're all lovely. You're
all fine.
Especially if you've got a 75 V8.
Yeah, but they do let them in, don't they? The recent MGs, the most recent MGs.
Oh piss! I don't know.
I think they do. Into the owners club.
They might have limits.
But I don't know. It's like membership to the MG owners club, like $1,000 a year or something. Because I mean, how many owners? Most owners clubs are run off someone's dining room table.
But maybe there's tiers.
Got a frigging office.
There's tiers. If you pay $2,000 a year, you get a flat. Or you get given like an actual garage.
Use of the MG flat.
Yeah, yeah. There's an MG flat in somewhere really leafy in London.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
You turn up with your MGF with coolant pipe issues.
Maybe that's it though. That they've got so much money they can buy your silence. So you go, how's your TF? Has it got coolant issues?
No.
They never did. Aren't these cars known for head gasket issues? No. Who's got to you? Is it the owners club? No.
They come and mend your car in the middle of the night. So it's always immaculate. Yeah. Do you have a crack team of MG people which have a van of spares?
Yeah.
A wealth of spares.
Yeah.
And in the middle of the night, like vigilante detailing.
Yeah,
we talked
but on a grander scale. If you've got an MG BGT that you street park and it's gone a bit frilly on the door bottoms, you come out one morning and it's mended. Yeah.
Oh, it's been taken away. It's been in a low bay cover. It's had new sills. They have just beavered away like Oompa Loompas on this thing.
Yeah, I can see that's probably what happens. But I'm still thinking about the Ford Fair, and if it does for some reason it has a medieval theme that doesn't fit with the cars.
What FAY? Maybe they should have. There should be a rival breakaway faction, and they do another Ford Fair, but it's spelled differently, and it's basically battle reenactment sealed knot.
Yeah, there's loads of jousting,
but with loads of force. So
jousting out of Sierra Cosworth.
Yeah, they have a probe jousting competition.
Yeah, probe would be
probe with the sunroof.
I'm wondering if the probe's a bit low. Maybe it's like Explorers.
Explorer.
Remember they brought the Explorer into the UK for a little bit, and
they did
stopped because it was shit. But
did. Was it? I remember the North Face edition.
Yes,
they did a North Face edition, didn't they? Yes. So you have to wear a wet look bomber jacket when you're driving it around.
Did they have really quilted puffy seats?
I'd love that.
What was that?
Oh, it's the hourly chime on my 80s watch.
Oh, okay.
Quilted puffer jacket seats.
Sort of not quilted though, like puffy bands, aren't they? It's not.
It is ribs.
It's only longitudinal. There's no latitudinal.
It's like a
lines.
It's like a black bibendum. It's like a black Michelin Babette.
Yeah, it's the other way around, isn't it? It's latitudinal. You have, it has an equator, but no.
A gunty equator.
But yeah, the North Face has definitely had wet looks. Yeah, it's like all TV film crews seem to wear North Face jackets for some reason. But so you look in the rearview mirror of a North Face Explorer, and you'd briefly think you had a beheaded film crew in the back seat because
it's just puffy, all puffy,
very very puffy, wet,
shiny
look.
Black.
Going heavy cornering in one of those explorers, you just slide off.
Has anybody listening to this ever owned a Ford Explorer? Folds.
I bet some of our North American listeners will have done, because the Explorer was a very popular car there, wasn't it? Until they realised the tyres were iffy.
Yeah.
That was, in fact, did you? This is something I discovered only last week from. Initially from a story in that Secret Folds book that I was talking about.
You're obsessed with that book.
It's brilliant.
Yeah,
I might go and read it again. In the 80s, Ford were going to do a supercar of sorts, which was codenamed GN34. In the early 80s, they decided they were going to do a supercar. They got Giugiaro to design it initially. And it was, in fact, there was a concept car, the Ford Maya was shown off. Motor show about 1983, but they were going to make a production car out of it with that V6, that SHO V6 out of the Taurus SHO. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Yamaha.
It was quite
design.
A quick car, apparently.
Yeah, and in the end, Ford management had to decide between doing the supercar or doing a new 4x4. That they thought would ride this new boom in sports utility vehicles that they could see coming.
Yeah.
And they went with the SUV, and it was the Explorer.
Oh, shit.
So the Explorer happened at the expense of a Ford supercar.
That's going to make people dislike the Explorer even more.
Yeah, but, I mean, it was, in retrospect, probably the right decision, financially speaking, because they'd have never made money on the supercar, but the Explorer was really successful. So.
Hang on, wasn't the Explorer the Jurassic Park vehicle?
Yeah, yeah.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
A friend of mine who runs a body shop down in Dorset, he painted one for a customer.
Oh, really?
They bought an Explorer and said, I want an exact replica of the Jurassic
green
Park.
With sort of beige trimming.
Yeah, it's got like a wavy line on it, like the skin of a snake.
Yeah.
Like where the belly goes into the side of a snake. Yeah, I can't remember. I mean, I'm going to put my hand up and say, I've never seen Jurassic Park.
You've never seen Jurassic Park?
I just can't be arsed. Because I know it's CGI.
Yeah.
I just can't be bothered.
It's good, I would say. I mean, I haven't seen it for a long time, but it's a good film. I don't know if it stands up.
Goldblum, but...
Yeah, well, that's it. He's one of those people, I'd watch him in almost anything. Just
he is really good.
He's really good.
Yeah.
I was just looking at my notes to see if there's anything that I wanted to mention that I'd forgotten, and all I realise I've got written down is, you remember ages ago, in one of our videos, we went to that little village in Cambridge, I think, called Wendenzambo.
I drove through it.
Did you?
This week. I was creasing up on my own in the car because I didn't know I was near it.
I think that village sneaks up on you. I'm convinced it moves around.
And I kept putting on a terrible South African accent.
Yeah, Wendenzambo. And we decided that he'd got a friend called Busness Untrust. So they were definitely hiding from some kind of fiduciary crimes.
Yes.
But for some reason, the other week, and I made a note of it to mention to you, is that I suddenly realised that one of their other friends was probably called Legal Reasons.
Legal Reasons.
But it's not spelled the way you think of Legal Reasons, because I saw it written down as somewhere, but they had to intervene for legal reasons. I was like, Legal Reasons?
Is it REZON?
Well, I've written it down here as LEEGAL, rather, so it's got two E's for no apparent
reason. Yes.
And then REESONS.
Brilliant.
Legal Reasons.
Legal Reasons.
Legal Reasons. I think we should probably wrap this up. Because apart from anything else, I'm supposed to not be in this hotel room anymore.
That's true. And also, I've got an appointment with the Palm Angels on the skid pan. Whatever that means.
All right, well.
Well, look, thank you.
That's quite enough of this. I'll do my three things. Which are, one, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel, which is called The Late Break Show. You're upping your output, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm trying to. We've just, in fact, the episode that's out right now, I think, well, when you're listening to this, will be a car cave of beautiful Mercedes, a bloke in Kent who has built himself a private Mercedes museum. Mm. It's amazing. It's born out of obsession. And he's got an SLC rally car that I drove. Yeah. Apparently, the car that got Mercedes back into racing after 1955 Le Mans disaster.
Really?
Yeah, it was the single car that got them back into it. Without that, allegedly, they wouldn't be in Formula One now and wow. wouldn't have their thirst for competing.
God,
again.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Huh.
And there's a backlog of things, including the Ford Bronco. I drove that just after Christmas.
Yeah, and that amazing cardening episode with you discovering those old Porsches and stuff.
That someone kindly or unkindly pointed out that the bloke looked like the sort of long-lost father of Magnus Walker.
Yeah.
Just sort of the Welsh, old, chubby, ruddy-faced Magnus Walker.
I can see that.
He's actually a really nice bloke.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an episode. In fact, I've now found out that two of those cars have already been sold.
Have they?
The white 912 has been sold. It's going to be pulled out. The 318 IS Beamer that got fire damaged has been sold.
Has it?
And it will ride again.
Oh, good.
And the MX-5s are gone.
Cool.
So now, if anyone wants a 924 turbo or two bad ones that you might be able to make one good one out of, you need to contact him. But yeah, he's got a numerous other. He casually mentioned to me off camera.
Yeah.
Because I saw an interior, like an 80s interior, sitting against a wall, just undercover. And I was like, that looks very cool. He saw me looking at it and went, yeah, that's from my Integrale.
What?
He said, I sent my Integrale off to be turned into a sort of rally car a couple of years ago. I thought, I'll just strip the interior out and have a cage put in and a couple of other suspension mods. And I went, really? I said, you have seen how much they're worth. I'd probably put the interior back in.
Where's the Integrale? He still owns it. It's just
he hasn't nagged the person that's doing the conversion. He hasn't seen it in about a year. I'm like, dude, they're 60 grand cars now.
Yeah, yeah.
So, sweet guy.
Sweet guy. The second thing I've got to tell you is I've got various books out. One of them is called Boring Car Trivia 3. It's available on Amazon or from the Smith & Sniff Late Break Show merch shop.
Oh, yeah.
And
you can buy apparel and everything, Smith & Sniff cups.
Yes, oh, that's it. Also,
mugs.
Point 2B, we have merch and includes mugs and T-shirts and all sorts of stuff. And we're in the process of discussing some new merch, aren't we?
We are. Designs are being designed.
Watch this space. The third thing I've got to say is last week we were talking about Bristol and we mentioned Unfinished Sympathy by Massive Attack. But did you know the strings on Unfinished Sympathy were arranged by and then performed by the same people who did the strings on Bittersweet Symphony by The Verve?
I did not, but they're
both... Same guy arranged the strings and the same orchestra. I think he had a larger orchestra for the Massive Attack... I can't speak anymore.
Massive Attack. That sounds like a Japanese import.
Yes, it does.
Four-wheel drive car.
Down the side of some
Massive
kind of,
Attack.
Yeah, it's a Mitsubishi of some kind. One of them had a larger orchestra than the other one. But what's weird about Bittersweet Symphony is that, you know, it's sort of famously based around that sample from an orchestral arrangement of a Rolling Stones track. It's the last time, isn't it, the Stones track? And
they took all the money, didn't
they? They did, but now they've given over the rights back to Richard Ashcroft from The Verve.
Okay.
Only in the last couple of years, I think. And if you hear that orchestral arrangement, which was by their old manager, Andrew Luke Oldham, it sort of sounds a bit like it's the bit in Bittersweet Symphony, but not completely like it. Because actually, there's original strings on that track.
Yeah.
And you can, someone on YouTube, I'll put the link to this because it's fascinating, in the Patreon show notes, but someone's taken the sample out and just, you can hear it without it, and it just sounds like the song. The sample is actually in the background with some original strings over the top that are inspired by the Stones cover.
I absolutely love both those tracks.
And they're great. I love the end of Unfinished Sympathy where it goes, it's the big orchestral kind of
it's amazing.
So there we are.
I thought you were going to talk about the lead singer, the singer in the Massive Attack track.
It's like Shara Nelson, isn't it?
Who had a restraining order put against her because she kept contacting the DJ, Pete Tong.
What?
And kept claiming to him, his wife and everybody publicly that he'd been married to her.
What?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She was. She might have been even sectioned.
Oh my God.
So I was a bit blown away by that. Pete Tong will not allow her anywhere near. She's not allowed to contact him. This went on for years. This went on for about 10 years. This is not a car-based fact.
Well, we're a bit beyond that now. Anyway.
I know. Listen, bittersweet symphony, life.
Sharon Nelson, things really did go a bit Pete Tong.
I think they really did.
Wow.
A bit too much.
God.
Yeah, on that side of things.
I was going to say, we doubled on the facts there.
Well, yeah, that's fact number 4B, isn't it?
No, we really are. There's a whole page of footnotes to this podcast.
Yeah. If there's any advice I can give you, is just don't listen to another Smith and Stiff podcast. They just go on a bit.
They talk about all things,
including drinking, ball bags, bad Fords.
Anyway,
thank you for listening.
Thank you.
And if you're a Patreon, thank you very much for supporting this podcast via Patreon. I'm going to dedicate this podcast to Meatloaf.
I think that's probably an appropriate note to end on. But we'll see you again next week. Goodbye.
You took the words right out of my mouth on that side of things.